Hey everyone, and welcome to the Sunnygo One Piece podcast. On this episode, we're going to be diving into episodes 499 through 501, which will cover manga chapters 585 through 587. And we have now reached anime episode 500, which is honestly insane to think about. Because when I started this, I didn't think I'd ever make it this far. Yet here we are. I am still making these episodes. And yeah, it's been fun. But on a less fun note, this week we found out that Akira Toriyama passed away on March 1st of 2024. And yeah, that was a pretty shocking revelation. He was only 68 years old. He died from acute subdural hematoma. And yeah, his legacy is felt throughout not just One Piece, but the anime community as a whole. I mean, he is essentially the grandfather or the father of shonen manga. He inspired Oda Eiichiro to make One Piece, as well as countless other series like Kishimoto and Taitei for both Naruto and Bleach, as well as many, many others. People, you know, were inspired by Dragon Ball and Toriyama's work, and he will definitely be missed. I know as a kid, we've all, at one point or another, tried to shoot a Kamehameha beam or tried to go Super Saiyan when, you know, things got tough or things, you know, we needed an extra bit of strength. And so he'll definitely be missed. And I mean, he's not only worked on anime and manga, but he's a huge presence in video games as well, with the artists behind the designs for Dragon Quest, as well as one of my all-time favorite games, Chrono Trigger. And so, yeah, his impact is nothing short of amazing in so many different ways, and in my life too. And so, yeah, rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. But yeah, with that, let's get into these episodes. So, synopsis. Sabo is coerced into going back with his abusive family in order to protect Luffy and Ace, but upon his return, he learns of a nefarious and twisted plan to set the Great Terminal ablaze along with all of its inhabitants. Sabo now has to find a way to warn his brothers, while Luffy and Ace must survive and escape. So differences. There are actually quite a few differences in these episodes. So of course, episode 499 is filler, but even the beginning of episode 500 is full of mostly filler too. It doesn't actually get back to the manga content until Blue Jam already has Sabo in hand and his father is there. So in the manga, it just picks up in the middle of the action after the skirmish has already happened. And the moment where Sabo, after hearing sort of the nefarious plan, is also different as well. So the plan to burn the Great Terminal is found out. And when Sabo observes the city folk to determine if what Stelle was saying is true, this moment is slightly different in the two versions. So in the anime, we see that Sabo is waiting on top of a rooftop in the morning to observe people, then begins to walk around talking to them. Now in the manga, however, it looks like he's about to enter a tutoring session with Stelle, and upon seeing the tutor's behavior, starts to doubt whether this plan is real. And then we see that the tutor, that same tutor in the anime, is there, but only in the background when Outlook is already pissed that Sabo has run out again. Now, in the anime, we also see Sabo racing to try and warn Ace and Luffy, but is caught by the police and locked up. However, in the manga, this never happens. After the moment, you know, Sabo realizes what's happening, we don't see him again until he gets to the gates of the Great Terminal, and until he kind of runs into Dragon. However, in the manga, it does imply that Sabo has been through quite a bit off-screen, and we don't see as he's all bloodied and dirtied by that point. So the anime definitely worked to sort of expand on this and show us a bit more of what Sabo had to go through to get to that point. And we see how he gets the injuries that he sustains. And then we also get to see more of everyone's initial reactions to the fire, from the edge town citizens being evacuated to the citizens of the Great Terminal being kind of denied shelter and escape. All right, so let's get into these episodes and my thoughts. As we left off in the last podcast, we continue the filler mini arc with the second half of it. It does explore a little bit more of Ace's resentful feeling about Roger and even gets into sort of with Naguri. But after a duel, Ace, you know, loses, he has to help Naguri build a ship. And like the first episode of this filler arc, this episode is largely pointless and uninteresting. And so I'm just going to kind of pass over the rest of it and go back to the canon stuff. And so we pick up the canon material where Blue Jam captures Sabo after being hired by his father and is then blackmailed into accepting his terms to come back for fear of Ace and Luffy's life. Outlook is one of those characters that you just hate solely based on their design, but once he opens his mouth, it's even worse. You just hate him more. It's just like how condescending and pompous his attitude is towards everyone he considers beneath him. And it's just like he's one of the worst people ever. And there's also quite a bit of nuance too in the next scene back at Blue Jam's hideout, as he's clearly a bad dude, but you get the sense that he's more of a product of this sort of messed up society more than anything, as he does show some sympathy for Ace and Luffy's loss. And he's also pretty intelligent, which is probably why he basically reigns over the Great Terminal. Like, he doesn't let grudges or anger completely control him, at least at this point. And he recognizes that it would be a waste to get rid of Ace and Luffy's skills, and instead recruits them for his own benefit. The police station questioning scene with Sabo and his father is also just a kind of a sickening scene as well. It just shows how rotten everyone of the nobility is. And this is where Oda really starts to hammer home the point that even with the state of piracy and the evils that the general pirates do, the real problem with the world is sort of the corruption and the inequality that these people in power really perpetuate. We'll even see that while there are evil pirates, and they often do evil things, that may not be inherently all their fault in the sense that they may have been forced into it due to their circumstances. Now, I'm not necessarily excusing any of the bad things that the bad pirates have done, but yeah, you see that the nobility are probably way worse than the pirates when you really think about it. Sabo, upon returning home, despite how much his parents say that they care about him, is only treated like a commodity, and it's even worse as Outlook kind of lets it slip that they only adopted Steli as a backup in case Sabo didn't return, and really only looked for Sabo so that he could use him to increase their power and wealth. And this is juxtaposed especially in stark contrast to what we just witnessed with Whitebeard and how far he went to protect his family who weren't even blood related. Also, can I just say, Steli is like one of the most creepy looking characters in all of One Piece. There's just something so unsettling about him and the way he's designed. But what's even more unsettling is just how okay he and everyone else are about burning down the Great Terminal and all of its people. Like, seriously, how fucked up do you have to be to not only not care about it, but also anticipate it with some glee? It's honestly one of the most chilling moments in the series, seeing just how emotionless everyone is about this. And one other side note about the scene with Steli in the bedroom with Sabo is that, again, in the manga, Steli refers to the Great Terminal as Gomiyama, or Trash Mountain. And this is taken even a step further, as Steli calls Sabo a lowly trash person. But in the anime, it opts to have Steli refer to it as the Great Terminal instead of Gomiyama. And in reference to Sabo, when Sabo grabs him, demanding to know what he meant by setting fire to the Great Terminal, in the manga, this is when Steli whimpers, "What are you doing, you lowly trash person?" And instead, in the anime, he says, "What are you doing? I'm telling my father." And again, I don't know why this was censored in the anime, but I am extremely curious now whether this term has become a derogatory term in the time between the publishing of this chapter and the broadcast of these episodes. So yeah, if anyone knows, let me know. I'll try and do some research on my end to see. I mean, I did some, and yet I still couldn't find any again. So this might be something I need to reach out to some of my Japanese friends or my Japanese family to see why this could have changed. It's a very interesting translation between manga and anime. It's rare that you see that. Moving on, though, it's almost unbelievable how detached and out of touch these people are with just human decency. But when you think about it, it's kind of what the real world is like, too. There truly are more people than I'd like to admit that would sooner take this same approach with society today. Just like a complete lack of empathy or even just understanding. And I always get this like skin-crawling, unsettling feeling whenever I read or watch this moment in like this scene, particularly. Of course, it gets worse, and the depths to which the king and the nobles will stoop to seems to have no bounds. As predictably, they tricked Blue Gem and his crew into doing their dirty work for them by promising them that they'd be given nobility status upon completing these heinous acts. And I think what's so maddening about this is that, yes, they're evil, but the fact that they pretend to hold themselves to a higher moral ground and consider themselves better than everyone else just because of their wealth and their status is just straight up disgusting. Like, it's so maddening and annoying to see these people act like this. And the fact that they won't even do the work themselves and then pretend to be these good and pure people while they exploit the people with less means who are desperate to survive into doing what they want and then casting them aside once they've outlived their usefulness is just really, really sad. And seeing this whole thing play out has always pissed me off so much reading this. Like, of all the villains in One Piece, I for sure hate the rich people the most, especially the embodiment of these types of people, the Celestial Dragons. Oda is smartly using this flashback to kind of help us really understand who the villains are in One Piece. It's the world nobles, like and the other nobility of the world as well. However, so far, all we've seen of them is sort of the cartoonishly evil ones, like the Rustwald family, like St. Charles, as well as the Gorosei. However, that cartoonish over-the-top representation can be a little hard to really comprehend how evil they are. So he kind of makes it more relatable by scaling it back a little bit and shows us a more grounded portrayal of that in this flashback. A portrayal that we can kind of relate to more because we see this type of behavior in real life of the rich exploiting the disadvantaged and poor people. And this gray terminal fire is essentially what the world nobles are doing and plan to do on a global scale. Like, when it comes down to it, the gray terminal fire is just a smaller version of a Buster Call. Anything the world nobles don't like or want to erase from existence because it threatens their perfect way of life, they just wipe it off the map by burning it down. Now, Sabo finally makes it to the gates, but he can't pass the guards, but is beaten away. And after some time, he's found by Dragon, of all people, and they have this intense conversation where we see Dragon realizes just how bad things have gotten. Now, this is quite a significant moment for a couple reasons. First, it's a turning point for Sabo's character as he's finally seen that it's not just the people, but the whole damn system is messed up and that he no longer wants to be a part of the nobility. But more significantly, this is really the first time since Logtown we've actually seen a significant appearance from Dragon, even if it is in the past. Like in Logtown, he's accompanied by strong winds, which further leads to the commonly accepted theory that Dragon has a wind or weather-based controlling fruit. And the reason I and many people think it's the latter is because in Logtown, it's heavily implied that the lightning bolt that struck the execution tower when Buggy was about to cut Luffy's head off was also summoned by Dragon as well. Now, if it's strictly just wind, his fruit would most likely be called the Kazekaze no Mi, because kaze being the Japanese word for wind. However, if it's weather-based, it becomes a bit more difficult to predict the word because the word for weather in Japanese is tenki, which wouldn't fit the devil fruit naming scheme since it's three syllables. So my guess is that he'd actually use the English word for weather because he's named fruits like this before where he'd use the English word for it. Like, so I would think this one would be like weza weza no mi, like as in like a Japanese, like heavily Japanese accented way of saying weather weather no mi. And that would still fit sort of the two-syllable naming convention. But yeah, I at this point, you really do get the sense that Dragon has a weather-based devil fruit. And something that I always wondered about was, why was Dragon even here in the first place? Now, we get a scene later that kind of explains a little bit more, but I'm also going to cover it here. Because it just seemed weird that he coincidentally was here, but now that I actually sit and think about, there were multiple reasons to be here. And the biggest reason was probably that the news of a celestial dragon was going to be there was one of them. But much later in the story, we get sort of an expansion as to why he was also here. We do get a scene later that talks about how he's got informants out here and pretty much echoes the sentiment that the Goa Kingdom is a microcosm of the world at large. But we never explicitly hear why he was there. But most likely, the informant basically told him about the arrival of the Celestial Dragon and the plot to burn down the Great Terminal. And he wanted to come help despite not having enough power to actually stop it at this point, because it was most likely that his revolutionary army was probably not all that big or strong at this point yet. Now, the next scene I wanted to kind of talk about, because sometimes Toei makes some really weird music score decisions that don't quite fit with the tone of the moment. And one particular instance of this is with the scene where Blue Jam and his crew are panicking about the Goa Kingdom nobles setting fire to their ship so they can't escape, as well as the moments post that, where we see the noble people kind of like seeing the fire. And the music that they decide to use is that sort of subdued, mysterious track that's often used when the Straw Hats are sneaking around or investigating something unknown or mysterious. Here in this scene, I feel like this doesn't make any sense to use this song here. Like, this is a time of panic and intensity as the fire is raging all around them, with Blue Jam screaming, while we see all the nobles casually watching the fire from their windows. And this is, I feel like this should have been more of like a more horror tone song here, instead of like this weird subdued mystery tone score. I don't know, that's just my thought. I mean, Toei does make some weird musical choices from time to time, and this is definitely one of them. There's also that one scene where a father and daughter are talking about why the people of the Great Terminal aren't humans and why they're burned. And oh my God, this is just the worst thing ever. Not only do they just completely dehumanize these people, but they're so detached from reality that they think that these people chose to be born as non-nobles and kind of mock them for it. Like, this is a child saying this too. I mean, you just see how deep the rottenness of these nobles and their philosophy, just how deep it goes, and it's really sad to see. Then we get to the final moments of this set of episodes, where Ace and Luffy make it out of their bonds but are then caught by Blue Jam and his crew yet again. And the biggest things I wanted to mention about this scene are both relating to Ace. So first is that when he explains to Luffy it doesn't matter about the treasure being taken, and at this point, the priority is Luffy's life. But then he catches himself and corrects it to our lives. And in Ace's mind, he was already ready to lay down his life for Luffy, kind of feeding back to this idea that his life isn't as important because of his notorious lineage. And this sort of sense of guilt and self-sacrificial nature is not all that dissimilar to Sanji, as we've seen. And I think it's kind of interesting that Luffy now has Sanji as well, very similar in the sense of how Ace treated Luffy's life. And I think this is one of the reasons why maybe Luffy was drawn to Sanji so much, especially after the events of Baratie and how self-sacrificial Sanji was. However, it's at this moment when Luffy's life is threatened, Ace is at his most determined, and his strongest will comes out in the form of Ace unleashing Conqueror's Haki for what we assume is for the first time. And it makes all the sense in the world that the son of the Pirate King would also possess Conqueror's Haki, but it's also strange that we've never seen Ace actually use it at any other point, or Haki in general for that matter. Like, we didn't see him use it against Smoker and Alabasta, or against Blackbeard on Bonaro Island, or even against Akainu at Marineford. Like, I find it hard to believe that Whitebeard or Marco or any of the other commanders like Vista or Izo never taught Ace how to use at least basic haki, let alone Conqueror's haki. Like, Blackbeard does comment during their duel that Ace had become over-reliant on his, basically his OP Metamenonomi fire powers. But this is, I think, one of those early plot hole oversights that Oda had due to not having haki as fleshed out earlier in the story, because there's just no reason someone of Ace's status and power that he wouldn't have trained to learn to use his haki more, especially Whitebeard, who can also wield Conqueror's haki. You'd think he would have taken Ace under his wing and at least like taught him sort of the basics on how to use haki to defend himself and to attack other Logia type users, since he and many of the other commanders, as we've seen, I mean, we saw Marco, we saw Vista, all of them kind of facing off against the admirals, and we see them actually be able to handle their fruits. And so I find it really hard to believe that they never just at least tried to train Ace. Like, and I don't think Ace would have been that. I mean, he's definitely cocky and hot-headed in the sense that maybe he would refuse the help at the beginning, but I don't see a scenario where over the years he wouldn't have at least tried to learn how to use his haki a little bit more, considering he has one of the greatest kinds. But yeah, the episode ends on a pretty intense cliffhanger with Ace about to be shot with no one around to help. And this in the manga wasn't that much of a cliffhanger, since it was right in the middle of a chapter and we immediately got to see what happens on the next page. But for anime-only watchers, this must have been pretty suspenseful as they get in terms of cliffhangers. But yeah, we'll get into the resolution on the next podcast. And I definitely am looking forward to talking about the next three episodes, because they're pretty intense. And also some of my favorite moments in the entire series. But yeah, if you did enjoy this, send me a like or comment. And if you want to join me on this journey of rewatching One Piece, please consider subscribing. Check out my Instagram and Twitter account at Sunnygo Podcast for updates of when I post new episodes and to see some of my manga collection. And as always, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out to listen to my podcast. No spoiler section today, but stay safe out there, and I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye!